For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Portrait pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
Listen as I sing all about the king. You can hear him all the time on the Eagles sidelines. He looks nice in his fur coat. Nitwit, moron, and dope are his favorite quotes. He cheers the wins and he boos the losses. He interviews athletes and mob bosses. He's an all-time Philly guy, a graduate of Northeast High. You can't get enough of Howard Eskin on WIP. That's why he's got this podcast. So listen up, because he's ready to speak.
Welcome to another edition of the Howard Eskin podcast. This one, I think, and you're really going to enjoy this. I'm telling you, you're really going to enjoy this. Kurt Schilling, who is always, always unfiltered. That is Kurt Schilling on this podcast. And he talks about everything from baseball, the game, the cheaters in the game, why he doesn't like the NBA, what you can do or not do with baseball, which fans are better, Boston or Philadelphia. He talks about the Hall of Fame. He talks about getting fired from ESPN. He really does criticize LeBron. He is not a fan of LeBron James. So there's so many things, but there's so many baseball inside things that he talks about that happened in his career, whether it was with Boston, whether it was with the Phillies. He talks about the only player he didn't like on the Phillies that was one of his teammates. Talks about Gabe Kapler, who he texts, periodically, as he and Gabe apparently are boys. Talks about the Mount Rushmore of players in baseball and basketball. I'm telling you, he talks about so many good things. So here we are, and you've got it. And obviously, after Kurt speaks, I want to talk about the Sixers situation, because I think that is really, really going to be a problem for them this year. What didn't happen this offseason? But here's Kurt Schilling. All right, I'm here with Kurt Schilling, former Phil, former Red Sox, former Arizona Diamondback, but in his new life. So, Schill, first of all, thanks. And let's start off with, and you're doing a lot, it seems like, what are you doing these days?
Well, I have a morning show, podcast, actually, on Breitbart. I did an online show for about 2 years, and given the fact that it's growing the way it is, we moved to a podcast format, and we've been doing that. Today was one of those. I had Judge Jeanine Pirro on, and Chuck Woolery, which was awesome. Good stuff. Great conversation. It's kind of like, I try to be kind of like a verbal Drudge Report in a sense. Like every day I'll play some sound bites at the beginning that people aren't getting. They're not mainstream. They're not front page, because much of the media doesn't want them to be. I'm enjoying the hell out of that, but I just started working with and for CRTV, which is Mark Levin and Steven Crowder, Michelle Malkin, all them. I'm doing a sports show, all sports, nothing but sports, which I love, it's focused on baseball for the most part, but it's a daily 20-minute quick catch-up show that we talk about stuff. We had a great show the other day talking about kind of the All-Star break, and I broke down, one thing I think I've always been comfortable with is my preparation. I've always been someone who prepares, and so I went through and spent a day, I've been following it, but I went through and spent a day researching the Machado thing, looking into all the teams, breaking down the prospects involved potentially, and looking at who actually had, it's not enough to want a guy. You actually have to have the goods to pay for him too. And, I came away from that and I was, I'm going to kill my dogs.
That's all right. Leave him alone.
I was really, really convinced. I think it ends up being one of two places. I had Philadelphia, and I still do, as my most likely candidate to land, and then the Dodgers. and really, I think it gets down to, when talking about it, Howard, it gets down to who believes they're going to sign him more.
Right.
And that's a, you know, because that really dictates the price they're going to pay. You know, apparently the Orioles are just, you know, caught up in this this pitching prospect of the Phillies, this Adonis kid, who I like, but I think that there are other prospects to be had that could help as much. So, and if you're going to get Machado as the Phillies, do you deal a Kingery or a Franco?
So, as we speak, the deal hasn't been official, but it sounds like it's the Dodgers, because the Dodgers have more, they have better, probably more and better prospects. Would you agree?
I would disagree to some extent. And here's the thing, Howard, it doesn't matter what their rank or what we think of. It only matters what the general managers in the deals involved value them as. You know, I heard that, you know, the Orioles were in love with this Adonis kid, this pitcher. But I thought there were a lot more prospects in the Orioles system that were as good, or in the Philly system. And so, yeah, it does sound like it's possibly the Dodgers, but I still have a feeling the Orioles or the Phillies will pay whatever price they need.
Yeah, I think the Phillies are going to sign him at the end of the year anyway.
Well, here's the thing. I would tell you this as a player. When you're looking at potential suitors, there's a lot of things you have to factor into the personal side. You know, would you rather go to Philadelphia and play in Philadelphia in Pennsylvania, or would you rather be skitting, you know, Hollywood, L.A.? Those are two very different lifestyles. And I don't know, you know, what kind of guy this kid is other than he's a Hall of Fame player. I'm not sure what he values more, because Philly can be a challenging place. And so you kind of have to like the lifestyle. I don't know if they can or not. I know they're in a great position, because if you look at it, who do you have? The Cubs, the Yankees, the Red Sox, the Dodgers, and the Phillies have now entered that discussion of, you know, if they don't have much of a financial ceiling when it comes to signing players they want, and that's a different thing for them.
Well, yeah, they're gonna have whatever money. John Middleton will make sure he has whatever money they need.
But if it turns out that, you know, I would go back to the Tavares thing. I don't know how much you followed that.
Yes.
But the Islanders and Tavares going free agent, he took a lot less money, especially when you factor in taxes, going back to Toronto.
Right.
So I mean, Machado's going to get $30 million a year for 6-7 years. He might be a $400 million player.
Right.
So if it's L.A. or Philadelphia, and the difference is between $240 and $260 million, what happens, right? I mean,
yeah, but the California taxes are so highest in the country.
I agree. It gives other teams an advantage, but you want to win right now, and he does. And listen, the Phillies are a year ahead of where everybody expected them to be, which is kind of like the MO now for young teams. But are they built for the long haul? And I'm not asking for me or you, but in a player's eyes, are you looking at that roster going, yeah, these guys are going to win it every year, especially when they're in a division with the Nats and you know, the Braves, who are up and coming. So there's a lot of little questions. And the one thing you guys in the media always underestimate is the personal piece. You know, where does his family want to go? Because they'll have an input.
Right.
Where, you know, his girlfriend or whatever, they'll have a say, and it's a much more important thing than I think a lot of people understand.
Well, he'll be the man in Philadelphia. That's why, and in L.A., I don't think he's the man. They have some really good players.
Well, here's the thing. There are a lot of guys that don't want to be the man.
So you'd say that could be part of it.
Remember what Larry Bowa did to Scott Rowland?
Yeah.
You know, and Scott Rowland just wanted to show up and play. He didn't want to be the man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he wanted to play and be that guy. Cal Ripken was the man because of the way he played, not what he said. But, you know, I don't know. Not everybody wants to be out in front. Look at Mike Trout. This whole thing over the Mike Trout thing over the All-Star break. You know, MLB saying, well, if we could market him more and he'd let us. Well, Mike Trout wants to show up and play the game. And he thinks that being the greatest player anybody that will ever see is enough, and other people don't.
Yeah, and baseball, I mean, the commissioner should pipe down on that. If the guy just wants to play baseball, it's your job or the team's job to go out there and market it.
But I would tell you this. Baseball has never had a better representative than I'm a huge Rob Manfred fan.
Yeah, I like him as a commissioner. I think he's better and will be better than Bud Selig. However, you shouldn't put the onus on the player.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Agreed. Because isn't that what we're all, as fans, sick of? Players marketing themselves?
Right. All they talk about is their brand.
I don't care what your brand is. Can you hit with runners in scoring position? Because right. That's the brand I care about.
You know what? And I think in today's world, I don't know how they would market him, but he's a guy that cares about striking out. I don't think players care about the problem with the game. I don't think players care about striking out anymore.
Well, they don't nearly as much, and there's some conversations to be had around that whole approach, but let me be very clear about something. For anybody that isn't 100% aware, this is a Hall of Fame caliber player. He's going to go to the Hall of Fame as long as he stays healthy.
Yep.
Entering the prime of his career. That's unheard of. He's 26 years old, and he's going to be a free agent. And he, I continue to believe Mike Trout will be the best player anybody alive ever sees. The second level of that conversation starts to me with Manny Machado.
Yep. Yeah.
What is that worth to you? Is that worth sending three prospects right now to have him for the final 2 months? If somebody in the East ends up with him, I believe he's the difference maker. All things being equal,
I think he's a difference maker with the Dodgers. I don't know if he's a difference maker with the Phillies.
He's absolutely. If the Braves are on the fringe of this too,
right?
But if they are, whatever team ends up with him, I believe is the favorite. I still think Washington's going to get it right and get on track. Although the Strasburg thing is going to be their bugaboo the second half. If he doesn't pitch, then that's a huge problem. But I think he ends up being the difference maker in the East. And I don't think it matters in the West because I think the Dodgers are going to end up righting themselves and be who we thought they would be.
All right. And I heard you mention it on one of the things I saw on Periscope. The All-Star game you thought was really good, but the length of the game is a problem. Now, the length of the game all season, the Phillies played the longest game and longest nine-inning game in the National League history of 4.5 hours, which is ridiculous.
Yep.
There's many more strikeouts than hits. It's what? Strikeouts, walks, and home runs is the whole game. How do people, baseball people, and you're still part of the old school, accept that?
Well, the game is, you're not going to change the game off the field. Here's the thing, Howard, and we're in a generation of instant gratification. Everybody, from an entertainment perspective, outside of a live sporting event, I can pick and choose what I want to watch, when I want to watch it, where I want to watch it, and how I want to watch it. Live sporting events have changed that, and baseball even more so, because baseball is the last true viewing event without a clock. It doesn't have a clock. It's never had a clock. Baseball is not for dumb people. You have to be able to. I'll tell you one of the. I was talking about this the other day. One of the ideas that I think would blow off the roof from a television and a viewing perspective is miking the players. That is there. I can't begin to tell you how many incredible conversations would be made public that would be. Oh my God, that's awesome. I think that is one of the novel ideas that's going to blow up in many ways because. You know, I had a mic on during the All-Star game in 2002, the day before and the day of, and that was the time I challenged Alex Rodriguez in batting practice and said, hey, listen, if I face you tomorrow and there's nobody on, I'm throwing you nothing but fastballs. And he's like, what? I said, yeah, I want to find out, you know. And the next day, it happened. And
right.
So, you know, those things, that made an at-bat a very different thing. Like, I challenged him. So there was like, oh, my God, what's going to happen here? And I love the thought of that happening in baseball because there's so much time between plays.
I don't know that they could do that during the regular season games because it could be a distraction. But I understand miking guys up. They do it in football all the time. I don't know. I don't know how many of the Eagles mic'd up segments that you saw that NFL Films put out. They were things, and I'm on the field for the game, and I obviously can't hear what
they're
saying.
Aren't they awesome?
Yeah, they're unbelievable.
And baseball, I don't know if you saw spring training, but they mic'd up Mookie Betts for Nesson, and somebody, or it was ESPN, and somebody hit a ball in the gap, and he's running to the ball saying, hey guys, I don't think I'm catching this one. Like, it was hilarious. It's just stuff you could never, ever capture that. And I think baseball would probably be the easiest sport to mic people because they can mic you and it's completely non-intrusive and things like that. You know, I would have loved to have been mic'd up on the mound because I talked to myself a lot. And a lot of the things I talked about were happening at the moment. I think it would be fascinating.
Well, yeah, and they probably hear things, which obviously they couldn't do it live like they did last night. Or like they did for the All-Star game.
I would tell you this. They probably could, because it's not like you think. It's not like F-bombs here and there and everything like that. Like, it's just the stuff like like last night when Machado and Kemp took the selfie.
Yep.
There was a conversation there that I'm sure people would have laughed their butts off if they would have heard it. And it's just another way to – and you know, like we said, the NBA, I can't watch the NBA. I just can't. And it's a sport built on players marketing themselves, and I don't enjoy that. I enjoy just finding out who the real people are, and those things can happen, and I love that approach.
You know, I want to talk about the NBA. Before I do that, all right, so the games are too long, and that creates an interest or lack of interest. What would you do to speed up the game or make the game more watchable for the viewer?
Well, here's the thing. The problem, Howard, is that we're the only ones that want it quicker. TV doesn't. The ballpark doesn't. The owners don't. There's no financial incentive to speed up the game because advertising is where they get their revenue. I mean, look at these TV packages. They're multi-billion dollars. If you don't draw anybody to your stadium all year, you're still going to break even the amount of money they're getting paid by these televisions. So there's no incentive. I would argue that bypass the fact you're not going to make the game quicker. If you're not going to make the game quicker, how do you make the game more enjoyable to watch during all of the lulls in the action, which baseball has like no other sport? And I would tell you that those ideas, you know, there's a way, and it's already happened, there's a way in the ballpark to allow the fans to interact with technology in the game that they haven't capitalized on yet as well. And so, Howard, the answer to that question is I wouldn't. You can't unless you change fundamentally how the game is played.
Right.
And, you know, this pitch clock stuff and visits and stuff, you know, I don't care. You can shave 40 seconds of a game off by making guys throw faster. But the fact of the matter is, you know as well as I do, pitchers that work slow don't pitch well and suck anyway.
Right.
The tempo is a weapon for pitchers. So the guys that work slow aren't usually in the game very long to begin with.
It seems like analytics.
On the flip side, Howard, and if you look back, that team that Theo built here, our Yankee games were 4.5 hours long every 9-inning game. It wasn't because the game was slow. It was because we had a 9-man lineup who would work the count every at bat. We didn't have guys that had 4 at bats and saw 8 pitches. We had guys like Damon he might have had 4 at bats, but he saw 32 pitches in those 4 at bats. That's a very different game as well. So when you're building a team on modern sabermetrics, on-base percentage, get on base, draw walks, block, the game's going to slow down. It just is.
Yeah, but analytics seem like it's created part of this issue because managers and baseball people don't care about strikeouts. They care about walks and home runs. The other stuff is irrelevant to them. Like in the All-Star game, there were, 10 home runs and nine singles for both teams. That's ridiculous.
They do care about it, but here's the thing. It's not you guys have – listen, Gabe has shown you guys, I think, how you can kind of mature. I mean, he was – I think – and I've been texting with him and talking to him all year long. I texted him opening day after he pulled Nola with 68 pitches and said, dude, that – you know, I'm mad at you from here. But the fact of the matter is, Gabe has gone, I think, from a purely analytical sabermetrics makes the decision no matter what, to starting to understand there's a little nuance and feel to how you do this. Neither way is the right way anymore. You can use numbers to gain an advantage, but you can't use numbers to gain every advantage. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah, but isn't putting a ball in play, there's more things that can happen.
Oh, absolutely.
By putting the ball in play.
You're preaching to the choir. I lived. Listen, the only ball that is a guaranteed out is a strikeout. Everything else, you have a chance to get on base. And I say this, that, you know, a strikeout, the on-base percentage of a strikeout is zero. The on-base percentage of a walk is 1,000. As a pitcher, I like one and hate the other. Everything else, you put the ball in play, anything can happen.
You know, Gabe Kapler had this, I don't even know what it is, XFIP. If a pitcher can give up 6 runs, but if he doesn't walk anybody and doesn't give up a home run, but gives up a whole bunch of base hits in the middle and throws a few strikeouts in there, his rating gets by XFIP gets better. How is that good for baseball? How is that good?
It's not. It's not. I mean, please don't misunderstand. All sabermetrics and all these stats are not created equal. And there are some stats that kind of go against the grain a little bit, which the sabermetrics people love. But the fact of the matter is, it's fielding independent pitching, or pitching independent fielding. Basically, it shows you, it's all about the things a pitcher can control and not things they can't. So strikeouts and home runs and stuff like that. And that's not a stat I'm in love with. I understand what they're trying to do with it, but like I said, you can't live by the book either way. It doesn't work. It never will work. You have to be good enough to. And I would argue guys like Craig Counsell, Alex Cora, guys I played with, Gabe the same way. Understand that there's a mixture of the two that you got to find for your team, and especially your players.
And all these charts that they use based on whatever analytics. There was a game against the Mets. He brought the right fielder in, I think it was Nick Williams at the time, to about like 225 feet. And the batter hit it over his head, and it scored, it was two or three runs.
Right.
And then Gabe said the next day, he says, well, I've been in the major leagues, and I don't want the ball to fall in front of me for a single. Well, that was ridiculous because...
No. Here's the thing. The shifts you see, and that's another thing I laugh about, is that baseball would try and put a rule in to stop the shift. The fact of the matter is, and I was one of those guys, I lived by this in the 90s early on, I had all my spray charts of where guys put the ball and play against me. And then with my command of the fastball, a lot of times I could dictate where the hitter was going to put the ball and play. I don't want somebody standing where I know a ball's not going to go. Now, if I make a mistake and they hit against my shift, that's my fault. But and I'll give you a great example. Tony Gwynn was so easy to pitch to because he was so good. He didn't swing and miss. And I finally decided I was going to stop trying to make him swing and miss and understand and acknowledge the fact that he was going to hit the ball I threw. So I would shift my right fielder to almost center field, my center fielder to left center, and my left fielder down closer in along the line. And I had three infielders on the left side of the infield because I was going to throw him a fastball away. He was going to hit it good, and he was going to hit it to left. He couldn't hit it out. But I just took my chances with, I'm going to crunch up my defense where I know he's going to hit the ball. And it turned out to be the one of the answers to kind of getting him out more than he got hits. But why would you want anybody standing on the field where you're pretty sure a ball's not going to go? When you see something like that, Howard, that's the pitcher screwing up a game plan.
So
he was brought in because the guy didn't drive the ball to that field, and he didn't have anything on his spray chart that showed that, and the pitcher made a big mistake.
All right, so now the spray charts talk, they move guys for the shift. After Arrieta, Wheelie went nuts on the shift one day, and it was his fault for giving up a home run. But
exactly right.
Whatever the case may be, but veteran guys, I don't think are comfortable, pitchers I'm talking about, are comfortable with a shift, and they want guys pretty much, you shade a certain way.
No, you know what? They don't. What they do is they bitch and moan when they make a mistake. And that's exactly what happened. When you have a shift for a specific reason because you know you can throw a specific pitch and get a hitter to hit the ball to a specific place. He didn't make the right pitch. That's on him. It's not the defense. And ultimately, at the end of the day, I always had control of my defense. So my pregame meeting was with my catcher, and I had one fielder in Boston. It was Dustin the second, who I would help manipulate my defense. I'd look at Dustin and say, hey, Johnny, and I'd move my hand, and he'd move Johnny Damon 50 feet to the left, 20 feet to whatever. But that's on the pitcher. The pitcher has full accountability once the ball, once he has the ball in his hand. And your defense is shifting because you know a guy's going to hit a ball. When you don't make that pitch, that's on you. So, you can blame it all you want. I remember RJ used to do that a lot. Like, he'd give up a hit and look in the dugout at the coach. Like, oh, my God, how can you play a defender there? And it was like, dude, that's where the defender usually plays.
Well,
what are you talking about?
This talk about outlawing the shift. I'm fine with the shift. I'm fine with it. I don't think you can outlaw it. If the hitters want to beat it, let them try to beat it. And then it becomes a different kind of game. So you don't want to see the shift outlawed, right?
No, but here's the thing, Howard. I'm telling you right now as a pitcher, I don't care how many home runs you hit. If you bunt against the shift four times and you get on base four times, you're going to change the defense. Whether it's David Ortiz, Mark McGuire, it's going to change. Because, he didn't hit a home run, but he's on first base.
Right.
And so then that will change. Or, and I don't want to make it sound like it's easy because it's not, you hit the ball against the shift. That's what you have to do. Until you get two strikes, you go up looking to beat the shift by 9 times out of 10, the shift is to the pull side, right?
Yep.
So that tells me I'm going to get something slow or something middle in. So I'm going to, until two strikes, I'm going to sit middle out, and if he makes a mistake, I'm going to drive that ball left field. because there's nobody there. Well, I can just hit a weak ground ball and get it hit on against the ship. But people don't do that because it's I'm going to swing here as hard as I can swing, and if I make contact, I'm going to hit a home run. If not, oh well. And
if you
that's why you see a guy like Santana is a good example of a modern day. I mean, people are frustrated because the guy is not aggressive at the plate. And Votto's the same way in many cases. But, you know, he hits 250, 230, and he has an on-base percentage of close to 400. You know, it would be one thing if it was Lou Brock or Ricky Anderson, but it's Carlos Santana.
Well, aren't pitchers – okay, usually the shift is – there's more shifts to the left-handers because, for whatever reason,
they
pull more. So now
yep. –
Isn't the pitcher a little afraid because there's that zone, that hot zone for most left-handers? If he makes a mistake, that hitter is going to hit the ball out of the ballpark.
Well, let's be clear about something. In the big leagues, that's just the way it is.
Right.
You know, I remember when Bonds couldn't miss. I mean, the years he was cheating, every pitch was a home run, or it was just ridiculous. And I said something at the beginning of the pitching meeting one day. I said, "Listen. There's no gray area here. If you're not good enough to locate within a 6-inch area, don't throw the pitch."
Yeah.
Some guys are just, that's just the way it is. But if you pitch thinking I can't make a mistake, you're waiting to go back to AAA. You know, so that, you know, you have the advantage to set up all the odds in your favor. And you know, I always say hitters are the dumbest people on earth, and hitters will tell you that pitchers are. But the fact of the matter is, when I have an entire team playing on the right side of the infield, and I'm pitching to a left-handed hitter, what does that tell you? You're going to get something off speed that you can pull, or you're going to get a fastball middle in.
Yeah.
So if you're going to, you know, and that's why you see a lot of left-handers will hit the ball really well into the shift. I don't care if you hit a hard ground ball to the shift because I got you covered.
Now,
so if you're going to hit a ball that you can't get in the air, then you're an idiot. Or if you're not going to work to keep your hands inside and shoot the ball, and I don't want to make it sound easy because it's hard. But the fact of the matter is, if you want to beat the shift, you can.
Shill, you were, I know, because you were down at those hearings, those Senate hearings,
right.
And you're really pissed at the cheaters. I was talking to Reggie Jackson when the Yankees were in, and he says those cheaters, he and a bunch of the other veterans are going to do their best to make sure that they don't get in. Do you agree with that?
Yes. I would never vote for one.
Yeah, and that's Barry Bonds, as great a player as he was.
They would have been Hall of Famers without cheating.
I know. He would have been a great player.
But it was an ego thing, right? Barry started cheating when McGuire and Sosa were getting all the media.
Yep.
Barry was twice the player any of those guys ever were. But he wasn't on the front page, and that pissed him off, and his ego made him cheat. And same thing with Clemens. Clemens won 192 games here in Boston before he was out of shape his last year. He wasn't in good shape. He got offended. I mean, and then he went. And it's to this day, it still crushes me because Roger Clemens is one of the main reasons I had a career.
Yeah,
and it was disappointing to see him resort to something like that. But, you know, here's the thing and it's the same thing with A-Rod, that what they did was ruin the one thing they couldn't buy, which is their legacy. They'll be forever, ever talked about as cheaters, no matter how good they ever were, and that you can't get away from that. And that's why I walked away from the game with my head up.
Did you see the interview that Jeremy Schapp did with Sammy Sosa? And he wouldn't acknowledge that he cheated.
Right.
Well, you know, the New York Times, he said, "Well, I was never tested positive." Well, that's not the question. I mean, when is he going to come clean? Because it seems
he's not. And here's the other piece about that. That's a very simple question. I'm going to ask you this. Howard, have you ever murdered somebody?
No.
Right. I mean, it's that simple of a question.
Right.
Right? It's no or some other answer. Whenever, as soon as it's anything but a no, it's yes, I did, and you caught me, and I'm not going to admit it. That's the easiest way in the world to look at that. It's just like, and you've been around the clubhouse long enough to know there's two answers to a question about a teammate. What kind of teammate is that? The one answer is he's an awesome guy, great teammate. Any other answer is there's a problem. Right? Oh, yeah, you know, he's a nice guy. He keeps to himself, blah, blah, blah. I mean, you know what I'm saying? It's like, it's very easy to decipher this if you can read between the lines, and you don't have to read deep.
All right, I'm going to ask you a fan question. The fan question is, you played the two best fan cities, there's probably three. There's probably Philadelphia, Boston, Chicago. I don't know who's number one, two, or three. You played in Boston and Philadelphia. Who has the better fans?
It's not like that. It doesn't work that way. They're completely different fan bases, but where they are similar, they have something nobody else has. They're similar in the fact that they demand success. Like in St. Louis, where it's awesome to play in St. Louis because they love their Cardinals, even when you don't do well. You know, Jim Eisenreich was a hometown favorite because of what he battled through, not because of what he battled through, but because he was good. Mm-hmm. When you think about guys like that. In Philadelphia and Boston, they want you to be accountable, but beyond accountable, at some point you have to perform. And it makes it a completely different environment. It's one of the challenges of bringing free agents in is you have something that some guy, I embraced it. I loved it. I liked the fact that I had fans that were going to keep my teammates accountable and hold them accountable because I knew I was going to take care of myself. There are other markets where you can get away doing whatever you want to do, however you want to do it. You can have a bad game here and there. Can you imagine if Bryce Harper hadn't run that ball out in Yankee Stadium as a Yankee?
Oh, my gosh.
Or Philly?
Yep. Yeah,
you know, that's the difference. And so I always liked it because I knew the fans were going to get on a teammate who wasn't pulling his weight. Even though I might do it in the dugout, players don't like to be embarrassed. And those fans, I love – I would tell you this, they are the worst effing fans on the planet for a visiting player. I hated coming to Philadelphia in 91 when I was with the Astros. They were mean as hell. And in Boston, I mean, they're every bit as mean. And here's the other thing. They're not just mean. They're smart mean, like New York.
Yeah.
They say stuff about your family, and they say it by name. Like, they know who you are, and it's like, whoa, wow, these people are – and they love their teams. We had a 20-year reunion for a team that didn't win the World Series.
I know. I remember that. It was
– but I'm saying that's how big of a deal sports are.
Yeah, it really is big. All right, so you touched on the NBA, and I think it's a broken product, but you don't like it either. What, in your opinion, is wrong with the NBA?
The players. I mean, it is the. I can't watch it. I don't even talk about it anymore. It disgusts me in the sense that you can. I can tell you probably with real close certainty the final four teams next year already. There's no competitive balance. Number one, and number two, any sport where you can win 140-95 on Friday and get beat 128-74 on Saturday is a sport where the athletes are allowed to give less than maximum effort. And that bothers me. It's amazing to me. Take the three or four teams that are going to play team defense, and those teams are going to be in the finals every year.
Yeah, so you
because
don't,
a lot of teams don't.
You don't.
And
like
I don't understand that. I don't understand how you're allowed to not play half the game.
Well, that's
I've never understood. I can't watch it. Like I said,
the coaches
I don't even
can't
talk
do anything
about it
with
because
the
it's not. I don't enjoy it. I mean, I remember Magic Johnson and Bird. And all of those players have grown up. And, you know, I know that's, when I was growing up, blah, blah, blah. But the fact of the matter was, I think it was a completely different game, and it was very enjoyable to watch. What's happening now isn't, because it's about almost as quick a race to Twitter after the game as it is to the post-game conference.
You know, you're right. It's unbelievable. They're all over Twitter. And
well, hey, look at the, I can't remember his name now, the kid in L.A. that got drafted, the big one with the idiot dad.
LeVar.
Ball.
Ball.
This guy, I mean, his dad, listen, I get, on one hand, I think it's awesome that this kid has come up and not done stupid stuff and got to the NBA. It's an amazing thing. But he is kind of the poster boy for entitlement, what we give our kids and what we give our youngsters before they actually deserve things.
Well,
But
they go to Twitter and they talk about themselves.
Well, because on Twitter there's a million or more people that will tell you that are yes men for you. I mean, listen, LeBron James, it stuns me. It stuns me that LeBron James has literally no self-awareness. None. Because there's nobody, he can't say the things he does and do the things he does with people around him that are going, dude, don't be an idiot.
He's the most insecure superstar that I've ever seen.
And here's the thing. Again, the guy has done an amazing amount of stuff off the court to help people's lives. I love that. I love that he hasn't beaten a woman and hasn't driven drunk and drugs and all. That's something. I mean, it's certainly something that makes him different from everybody else. But the fact of the matter is, the things he does and says, he has no concept of self. He doesn't understand, or he does and he doesn't care, that he's projecting himself to be an idiot when he could go down as the greatest player that ever lived.
When I saw you on Periscope one day, you made a comment. It was disgraceful or disgusting that he complimented himself.
Oh, my God. Please tell me you saw that.
Yes.
I had never seen it. My son pointed that to me.
Yes.
He literally wrote an Instagram message to himself telling himself how awesome he was and how proud he was of himself for achieving something. Like, really? I mean, come on. because if I'm LeBron's teammate, I'm absolutely destroying this guy in the clubhouse. Like, are you kidding me with that? Can you imagine LeBron James on the 93 Phillies?
Oh, no, he would get crushed. See, I think he would get crushed in Philadelphia with that stuff.
This is a guy who, and again, hats off to him for what he's done off the court, but now he's starting to use his voice in the political arena, and he's completely ignorant of the real world, and that's where it gets dangerous.
You know what? You can't like the fact that these guys put together their own teams either. You can't like that.
Listen, that's the game's fault, all right? The players run the NBA. Let's be very clear about that. That makes it different right off the bat. The players get to run that league, and they step all over ownership, and they step all over the commissioner and all that stuff because they're the product. They know they're the product. Look at these contracts. I mean, this is – which tells you all you need to know about the NBA. It's got to be doing well because these guys are making massive – and I'm talking about guys that aren't actually good, making massive amounts of money. But – for some reason, people are still watching the sport, and I can't bring myself to do it.
So do you obviously see, because you're on Twitter, you obviously see some of the players. Who are the most, in your opinion, that you've seen outrageous players with what they say on Twitter?
Well, LeBron's in a league all by himself, literally and figuratively. I have actually stopped following any NBA players on Twitter because there are a couple guys that are hilarious. They're funny because they're making fun of themselves, and I get it. But the fact of the matter is, these guys are trying to use Twitter to increase the size of their shoe contract. And God bless them, that's their right. But they act like they don't recognize it. And I would also tell you this. Adam Jones, the center fielder for the Orioles, tried to call baseball a racist sport 2 or 3 years ago because of the percentage of blacks that played the sport. I never hear anybody on the other side of the fence talking about the fact that the NBA and the NFL are 70-80% black. Having said that, these guys have the most powerful platform to change the message. And the fact that Colin Kaepernick used the lie that created Black Lives Matter, that whole hands up, don't shoot thing, which proved to be a lie, mm-hmm. that they use that lie and that narrative to push a false story. There is not 1 ounce of scientific evidence or data that supports a disproportionate level of violence to young black men in the inner city. That doesn't mean there's not racism. There's always going to be racism. Yep. But the fact of the matter is these guys have a chance to say, listen, get off your ass and make your own way. Most of them did exactly that. Yes, they worked their asses off to be who they are and get where they got, and they're pointing to injustices that aren't true. I mean, again, the hands up, don't shoot was a lie. They have a chance, just like we had during Obama's 8 years. Obama had a chance to fix a lot of things. You know, a lot of racial divide could have been mended, and it wasn't. And I feel like the athletes in those sports many times. I like that they're in the conversation, but for every. For every Ben Watson, there is a Stephen A. Smith. There's a Jalen Rose, where it's like, come on, man, are you kidding me?
Yeah. Well, so, all right, so now the players in the NFL obviously make an issue that the league says it's a rule. And the NBA has a rule. You have to stand during the national anthem.
Right.
How much do you despise what the players are complaining about with whether you stand or you're not, if you don't want to stand, you stay in the locker room?
Embarrassed that we're having that conversation, honest to God. And I think a lot of it goes to show you that there's an enormous amount of professional athletes, an enormous number who were raised without a father. My dad would come back from the grave if I even contemplated not standing for the anthem. I was taught respect and the things that I was taught, integrity and all those things, by my father. And the thought of letting my father down. I mean, I think I saw a stat the other day. 27 of the last 28 mass shootings in public were committed by people who grew up without a dad. Mm-hmm. And when you look at what's happening across this country and, you know, the moral decline and the moral decay, I argue that there's two reasons why. Number one, I don't know about you, but I grew up at my kitchen table. My family ate dinner together every night, and my dad smacked me on the head when I did and said stupid stuff. That doesn't happen anymore. We don't raise a family together. And when we do, when you see an athlete who's got parents he's proud of and not just a mom and all those things, you see kind of what this country used to be. And that's happening less and less, and I think that's unfortunate.
All right, so now we get into, I heard, and again, I watch your Periscope stuff a lot. I think you talked about it today. Your Mount Rushmore, who would your Mount Rushmore be in baseball?
In baseball? One caveat to everything I do in baseball. When I talk about the best ever, I talk about post-integration. Okay. I'm not going to include somebody that didn't play against blacks and minorities.
Okay.
Because if you were to take the minorities out of the sport the last 20 years, can you imagine what it would look like?
Yeah.
So I talk post-integration. My post-integration, I don't have my mindset on right now. I'm just going to go with position players.
Go ahead.
All right. Ken Griffey Jr.
Right.
Throw some names out at me because I'm spinning.
Well, Mike Trout, he's got to be
Trout,
there even now.
And I'm going to say this again. Mike Trout will be the greatest player anyone alive ever sees.
Yeah, you know what? I don't disagree with you. He's that good.
Mike Trout, probably Griffey Jr.
All right, so now you look at the home run hitters. Willie Mays is in your
yes.
realm. Willie Mays
right.
has to be in there, right?
Right.
Hank
well,
Aaron
the guys
has
like
to
Clemente.
Yeah, Clemente, Aaron.
Well, I mean, Hank Aaron, of course.
Yep.
So you know, I think really Aaron still was far, far better than people give him credit for.
So right now, it's Mays and Aaron really have to be at the top, right?
And think about that. We're talking about two black men that weren't even allowed to play the game.
Right.
Against Gehrig and those guys. So I think Mantle maybe is in there.
Mantle? How about Ted Williams, who 4 years was in the service?
Yeah, but see, there again, a guy who did not compete against black players.
Oh, he didn't. Okay.
Until the end of his career.
Right.
Right. And that doesn't take away his greatness because I think he would have hit 406 in any generation. But it's just a different. I mean, Bob Feller used to talk about how great he was, but the fact of the matter is, Bob Feller didn't have a Barry Bonds
right.
or a David Ortiz. You know, so it's a different game. But yeah, Mantle, Mays, Aaron. Oh my God, there's so many names that
amazing.
Is Koufax one of them? I would go just with position players.
Yeah.
So you know, maybe what about Jackie Robinson?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe the numbers don't say Jackie Robinson greatest ever, but the numbers he put up under the circumstances with which he put them up, I don't think anybody can. That's why I get offended anytime I hear black athletes say talk about oppression, and they don't have a concept of what these guys went through, and that's troublesome. But and I know we're leaving people off
and
right.
But
the fact of the matter is, Mays and Aaron would absolutely be one and two, and I gotta say Mantle, like guys like Frank Thomas. Here's the cool thing about a Mount Rushmore: the fourth face, sometimes the third, are always up between about 30 different people.
Right.
Because it's all personal preference. Mike Schmidt.
Yep.
Well, you know, I mean, you could make a valid argument for him as well. Pete Rose.
When 500 home runs was really something.
Right, right. Yeah, that's really, to me, what my era screwed up. Yeah. The players, and me included, we screwed up big time. Not holding each other accountable ruined our generation. And we deserved it.
All right.
And we knew about it, we didn't fix it, and we're paying for it.
All right, NBA, you're Mount Rushmore. I have mine, and it doesn't include LeBron James.
I got to go Jordan, Bird, LeBron, and Russell.
All right, so here's what you forget. I mean, Wilt Chamberlain.
I
saw him, he's in the 60s and the 70s. Wilt Chamberlain averaged 50 points and 25 rebounds 1 year.
But here's my argument against that, the only reason, and I'm not saying he doesn't belong. What would Shaquille O'Neal have done then?
Because
Shaquille O'Neal was as big as Wilt, but about 200 pounds heavier. I mean, you can't argue that. I mean, Oscar Robinson.
Oscar, who averaged a triple-double his rookie year when triple-doubles really meant
season.
Something. Yeah, the entire season. When it meant something. Now,
right, no, you're
just,
right. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so Oscar's in there. So that's why I don't put LeBron in there.
Dr. J?
I don't put him in the top four. I put Wilt, Jordan, Bird, Magic, Russell, or Russell Magic.
Yeah.
Kareem's got to be there, I think, before, and that's what LeBron's going after now. He just wants the most points in NBA history. So I put him before LeBron. And Kobe, who do I want in the last two, and this is the way I've talked about it on the air, who do I want in the last 2 minutes of a game, Kobe or LeBron? Or Durant. And Durant's not in the Mount Rushmore.
Durant, Westbrook, what about Steph Curry?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you're looking, and that, like I said, that fourth name is always a huge argument. I love it because it brings out the passion people. But, you
that's
know,
why I don't put
the hard
LeBron
part is
in.
Talking about generation to generation.
Yeah.
You know, Larry Bird was a player for all generations.
Oh my gosh. It was, you know, Larry Bird, when I watched those old games.
Oh
my God, the 80s. I mean, those guys played defense. And if LeBron, and when a guy comes down the lane, and you just don't have a free ride to the basket.
Right.
Against Detroit, the Bad Boys or whatever the heck they were called. If LeBron came down the lane, he'd be on his ass. They put Jordan on his ass a couple of times.
Right. Well, and I watch Bird and I think, my God, look at a slow white guy. Like in a sport of vertical and speed, he was who I would argue, give me the Mount Rushmore of last second shooters. Who would you want to have the ball at the end of a game? I would argue Bird's on that.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, there's a select group of guys who you wanted the ball in their hands. They may not have been the stars, but at crunch time, they were scoring.
Yeah, and a guy like Bird made everybody on his team better.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah. That to me is one of the things that LeBron doesn't have.
Right, and
he
Jordan
doesn't have the ability to make players around him better, or doesn't try the way he knows he can.
Right,
because LeBron's story is not about the his team winning; it's about LeBron, and that's I think he might be the greatest player that ever lived, but there's something there that makes him well. I mean, that we're talking about anything but his basketball game tells you all you need to know.
Right. All right. So, that's why I don't have LeBron in the Mount Rushmore, because I just can't put him ahead of some of those guys that...
Yeah, but the problem is that the second you leave him out, people just immediately tune out. Think you're an idiot if you don't have LeBron. Because as much as I'm not a fan personally, I don't know that I could do a Mount Rushmore without him.
All right, Shil, here's a serious question. ESPN, and I thought you'd, obviously, just talking, we know that you know the game and you can analyze it really well, and I don't know that those national broadcasters can do as good a job. I think A-Rod's a fraud, but you may like him. I don't know if you like him or not. Not a fraud. He won't talk about the things you really want to hear about, but nonetheless, I thought you were good in the booth.
Now, you
get let go by ESPN for something that you said. Yet, Jameel Hill, is that her? Jamel Hill, whatever her name is. They let her stay on when she calls, and I don't want to get into the politics part of it, but whoever the president is, she called the president a racist, regardless of who it is. Now, how does that compute in your mind?
It doesn't. The only reason that might offend me is because the company she works for tries to continue to tell us that they're not political. That's one of the most liberal companies on the planet, and there's just, y'all just do is, well, listen, they fired me because I said as a man you should pee in the men's room, basically, and they brought Keith Olbermann back, who is one of the most repulsive, ignorant, idiotic people on the planet, and, you know, I mean, so everything happens for a reason, and, you know, I was making, $2.5 million a year there, talking about the one thing I know, I feel like I know as well, if not better than anybody on the planet. I thought I was okay at it. I thought Aaron Boone and I would have made a great team in the booth, because I loved Booney, even I love the hiring even more. But you know what? They let people make the call at that station that have very progressive and liberal, even though they can't explain to you what a progressive is, they let them make the calls. And when they do that, you know, the people that fired me never face to face with me. That was the even more embarrassing part. So,
the network's turned into garbage.
Everything, I'm happy. I am talking about getting back into the game in some capacity, which would be fun for me. But I'm good, man. My family's healthy, and I've been cancer free for four years,
that's good
you know, I can't complain. I've lived a life so far beyond what I've deserved that I'm embarrassed.
You know what, Booney, I think is, and obviously you think so too, is a good manager. I remember him when Bob used to bring when his dad used to bring he and Brett out to the ball. I remember him when it's 6 years old, and I said,
"That's how I know I'm old."
Yeah.
I'm starting to see kids I used to throw in garbage cans in the minor leagues, like getting to the big leagues, and guys I played with are now coaches and general managers. That's how I know I'm up there and getting old. But like I said, I've been so beyond blessed in my life, I got nothing. If tomorrow it ended, I would have no regrets.
You know, and I think Aaron Boone's a good manager. So I know you like Gabe, and I've had some challenges and some issues with Gabe. It's analytics. But here's what I'm going to ask you. As a player, if the manager says something which is critical of what you did in the game, do you run and hide? Do you think, oh my God, the manager can't say anything like that? It may hurt the player. Can't the manager be honest sometimes? And Dave never does.
And you know me well enough to know you already knew the answer to that question before you asked it of me. If my manager ever publicly called me out in a way that was intentionally embarrassing, then I would have had that meeting. I was also a player who I went to my managers. I went to Tito at the beginning of the season and said, listen, if we get to a place where you need to have a team meeting and you need to scream at somebody, I'm here. I'm fine. I can handle it. I can take it if you want to bury us. And you know, I don't have a problem being called out. Because if you remember, I don't know if you remember, in 1993, Dutch called us out. We were in St. Louis. We had had a nightmare before the All-Star break. And Dutch called me out in the media and said that I needed to wake up and all this other stuff. And he also was trying to call Tommy Green out at the same time, but he did it very differently. And the media came running over to my locker, and they said, hey, listen, Dutch just said X, Y, and Z about you. None of it complimentary. And they said, what do you think? I said, well, he's right. And they were just flabbergasted, like, oh, my God, you're supposed to yell back at him. I was like, no, I mean, he's right. What am I going to tell you? I can't tell you that I'm getting the job done. I'm not. I don't have a problem with that. I'm going to fix it. I'm not going to lose the game the second half. I mean, you know, I took that. Dutch knew he could do that with me. Managers know who they can and can't do that with. The problem is I don't think you can do that with anybody anymore.
Well,
and that's the problem. You know, you have to do it. And the other thing is, if you listen, you know, you're one of those guys who got on Tito because you felt like he was too soft on the players and all that other stuff. But the fact of the matter was, you want to play for a guy you care about. And Tito made you care about him. And that's a very different thing. I played for guys whose opinion of me, listen, I didn't care. I knew what I was going to do. I was going to take the ball every fifth day, and I was going to be as good as I could be. There are other guys like Johnny Padres who I wanted to impress. And those are two very different kinds of people to play for.
Okay, who didn't you like on the Phillies? What teammates did you not
like? I only had one bad teammate in my entire career, honestly. I had a lot of guys I argued with, but I never had what I would call bad people other than Mitch. Mitch, you know, him and I never, ever were friends. We saw eye to eye. I just didn't like people that treated people that weren't in uniform like bad people. And that was a problem he and I mean, Mitch was a guy who came into a game, or who came, I'll never forget it either. You know, that 93 team, it was a lot of it was about being accountable.
Right.
And the day I stopped worrying about the Macho Row opinions was the day that Mitch came into I was pitching against Montreal, and I loaded the bases in the ninth inning, and Fregosi left me in, and I got out of it, and we won. This was in August. And Mitch came into the locker room, and he threw his glove across the locker room because he was pissed because he didn't get in to get the save.
I
looked around, and no one said anything to him, and I said, okay, I get it now. I see how this works.
Okay, well, let me give you an example of Gabe. And again, I get along with Gabe, and I did a bike ride, and it helped autism. And Gabe donated $1,000, which was nice, and he knew that we had our differences. But in the Miami series, right before the All-Star break, Carlos Santana forgets how many outs there are. Now, that's combined with earlier in the season, he didn't run when he thought a ball might have been foul.
Right.
And he says after the game, I think it was on Sunday, well, I give him a pass. And can't you say, hey, listen, I've got to address that with him. That's not acceptable. Can't you say that?
Well, first of all, no. You don't say it because I'm trying to remember. I just heard the other day. Dave Martinez, when Harper didn't run the ball out, Dave Martinez said, I'll address that with him later. That's, first of all, don't ever say that. Because, number one, what you've done is created a situation where it's not going to die now. Instead of saying, here's what you say when that happens. He knows better. He knows he made a mistake. It's a fundamental mistake you can't make. We don't accept those things on this team, and he won't do it again. I have full confidence he'll be fine. And then you have a conversation, because the story dies there. Then when you go into the clubhouse, you call him and you say, listen, dude, that doesn't work here. That's not going to work ever. You know, if I'm going to put you in a lineup, I'm putting you in a lineup because you're healthy and you can run the ball out.
Right.
So don't embarrass me anymore. That's fine. And then those things end. But when you say I'm going to talk to him, now they come back and say, hey, what'd you say? Well, that's between him and I. And then they go to him, what do you say? Well, that's between him and I. Mean, you know what I'm saying? You kill those stories and you deal with your players behind the scenes. How do you think Tito managed Manny Ramirez for so many years? I can't even tell you the stories of what he did behind the scenes and how he acted. But it rarely got out into the media. I know I got into a couple different physical fist fights with Manny, and no one ever knew about it. But that's what happens.
Yeah, but I when he does it, every time, there's never, ever, ever anything negative. The Phillies.
I know. But what he's doing, and what I think what you have to do, he's creating a barrier between you and his player.
Okay, let me give you another example.
Player, no, listen, no matter what, Well, let me give you an example, Howard. Opening day, 2004. Yep. Pedro pitches and loses. Pedro leaves the ballpark in the sixth inning.
Mm-hmm.
And which, first of all, people that don't know this, that's not acceptable ever, anywhere, ever. Everybody stays for the entire game, no matter what, especially if you're pitching. But you address the media, blah, blah, blah. After the game, the media says to Tito, you know, Pedro left, blah. Tito says, well, it's probably my fault because I didn't explain the rules before the season started. Like, everybody in the room knew what he was saying.
Yeah.
And he looked like an idiot saying it, but he did it because he wanted his players to know, hey, listen, you know, don't embarrass me. And so we as players, we'll handle that. Hey, listen, dude, I get that if you're tired, don't play. But you can't walk a ball out. You can't do that because it makes our manager look like an idiot. What? And so, you know, what you do is you create those 25 guys who are going to stick up for the manager when something like that comes up. And as a player, you're on the outside looking in if you're not one of those guys.
Okay, so I remember sitting after the game. Gabe comes in. It's after the first two games in the Milwaukee series here. They outscore the Phillies 24-7. It was 37-13 in the series. 24-7, and he says everything's okay. You can't do that, can you?
Well, no, here's the problem, Howard. You can, because the Major League Baseball schedule is 162 games. You cannot, no matter how much you want to believe, you cannot manage every game like an NFL season.
Yeah, okay. Because that's only 16 games in the playoffs. All right.
No, right. And I'll give you another example. We're down 3-0 to the Yankees in 04. I mean, no one's ever done it before.
Right.
And I can tell you one of the reasons we did it was because if you go back and watch the post-game press conference, the first words out of Terry Francona's mouth were, hey, Terry, what now? He goes, what do you mean? Well, you're down 3-0. He said, well, okay, we're going to show up and we're going to bust our ass tomorrow and play the game as hard as we can play it. And we just kind of all realized at the same moment, okay, nothing has to happen except for tomorrow's game. You know, it's that just a lot of times you break things down. We make things a lot more complicated than they really are. And right. It came down to us focusing on one inning at a time, and eventually we were up 4-3.
All right, so now we get to the Hall of Fame. Your votes have decreased because of your, I'll call them your views. Is that fair, and do you think you'll make the Hall of Fame?
Fair is a word I stopped worrying about the day I left my home. My dad told me the word fair no longer exists because the world's not going to look to treat you fairly. So I don't look at it that way. If I do not get into the Hall of Fame because the people voting don't think I'm worthy of Hall of Fame, that's fine. If I don't get in the Hall of Fame because the people are voting disagree with my political views, but you know what? There's nothing I can do about it. Mm-hmm. I mean, the fact of the matter is, I put out a post, and I don't know if you remember the T-shirt that said, "Rope tree journalists, some assembly required." And the commentary for me was commenting on the fact that the mainstream media was literally committing suicide. This was during the run up to the presidential election.
Right.
Now suddenly, I'm someone that is a proponent of lynching. Like, did I have some dark past where lynching was a thing in my life? Or no, it was a tongue-in-cheek sarcastic comment. They decided they were going to be completely offended by it. I can't help that.
Well, that's what but Twitter and social media have created a lot.
Oh, sure
of
they have.
Yeah.
Sure they have.
Twitter. I mean, I can do something really nice and somebody says something really arrogant and stupid and awful on Twitter.
Howard, I played in an era when, and I realized this early in my career, thank God, I was in social situations in public where a player made the news for having done nothing but being there. You know, everybody has a camera. Everybody has a phone. Everybody is an on-the-scene reporter now. And all you have to be, and I had to teach this lesson to my kids. If you're in a situation where the police arrive, no one's going to know anything other than, you know, so-and-so Schilling was at the event. Because nobody cares about the other people.
Yep.
And that's a challenge. But you have to accept that. That's part of the life when you become a star athlete. Whether you want it or not, you're going to get attention. And so you have to deal with that.
All right. Give people where they can – well, Periscope is Periscope, so you're on Periscope.
Right.
It seems like
what I'll
day.
Do every morning is I'll shoot Periscope, and it's kind of behind the scenes. I do a podcast that's on iTunes. The new one's on today. By the way, today was amazing. I had Judge Jeanine and Chuck Woolery on. That's on iTunes, Curt Schilling Podcast.
Okay.
And then every day on CRTV, I do a sports show. It's called On the Clock with Steve Dace. And we do basically a 20-minute rundown of sports. It's pretty baseball-focused. And that's on CRTV. And if you go to CRTV right now and sign up, there's a code, OTC20, On the Clock, 20 minutes. OTC20, you get $20 off the first year. It's $99 a year, which is, like, ridiculously cheap. And some of the smartest, most forward-thinking people on the planet are part of CRTV, including Mark Levin. So I'm having a blast.
Okay. You know what? It's I could be in the car, which is probably not safe, and I see that you're going to go live on Periscope, and I pop it up. But I do watch it when I can.
I appreciate that. I think a lot of it has to do with the guy you know. Howard, with the exception of throwing a ball really, really hard, very, very accurately, I'm not much different than anybody else from a pants-putting-on perspective. I like to think I'm more informed than people that argue with me because I've worked my ass off to become smart about things that maybe baseball players don't. You know, I can talk about pitching with runners in scoring position in Game 7 of the World Series, and I can also talk about the Palestinian-Israeli conflict with a lot of confidence and knowledge, you know, and that people don't like that. You know, it's the whole stick to the sport and keep your mouth shut kind of a thing.
Right. Well, I enjoy as much. There were times when we disagreed, but that's all right. That's who we are.
Right. But they were never personal.
Right. That's exactly
the difference.
Right.
I always made a point to say hello to you and reach out, and you were always someone who dropped me a message every now and then when I was going through tough times. And those are the people that you hold on to as friends and you don't forget.
Okay. Hey, it's really fun, and we'll have to do it again. And
absolutely.
And I'll be watching you all your stuff there.
Take care, Howard. Thank you.
All right, Chill. Take care. Bye-bye.
All right, buddy.
He, I told you, is unfiltered. That's who Curt Schilling is. Unfiltered Curt Schilling. He says everything. We could have gone on for hours talking about this stuff. But let me get into the 76ers. Their offseason, and Brett Brown brought this on himself. I like Brett Brown as a coach. Actually, I love him as a person. I really like him. He's not a great coach, but he's a really good coach. Greatness comes over time, and he's got to do it more than 1 year. But he's a really good coach. But he's not a general manager. And that really screwed up the Sixers offseason because he can't be the general manager. You can't have your coach do those things. So he makes a comment on draft night, we're going to go star hunting. Well, then you put the expectation so high that you're going to either get LeBron, Paul George, or a trade for Kawhi Leonard. They got none of them. Then they signed a guy from Serbia, and then he decides he's not coming, and you let Bellinelli and Ilyasova go, and they don't need both of them with Redick coming back. They needed one of them. They're not a 52-win team right now as we speak. They're not as good as they were last year. And the conference got better because Toronto gets Kawhi Leonard. And Boston's going to be better because they're going to have Kyrie Irving and Hayward back. So this is not a gimme. To think the Sixers are going to take a step forward and Joel Embiid is going to get better. I think Joel Embiid will work at the things he needs to work out. I'm not sure about Ben Simmons. Ben Simmons, you got to acknowledge your issues before you start working on him. He didn't. But that being aside, they got nobody in the offseason. They didn't get any stars. The star hunting was a failure. They couldn't shoot straight. Whatever it is, and the LeBron thing was ridiculous. They were never going to get LeBron. He was never going to come here. And just because they got a meeting with his agent. Remember, it wasn't LeBron. And some people, even here at WIP, thought, oh, yeah, he's coming. He's coming. No, he was never going to come. But they have an issue, and I don't know if there's anything they can do at this point to make it better. Guys are going to have phenomenal years for them to get to 52 wins. It's going to be interesting. Cleveland, you say, oh, okay, Cleveland's not as good. Yeah, but they split with Cleveland anyway. So what's the difference? They already split with Cleveland. So they're not going to do better than split with Cleveland this year. They did win two games again, if I remember correctly. So they really have issues, and obviously we'll talk about that down the line. So hope you enjoyed Curt Schilling. He really was really good, and we'll have to do that again. And I hope you enjoyed the Howard Eskin podcast, which obviously is available, as you found it, on iTunes. And you may have found it because I tweeted it out. So whatever. Enjoy it. We'll have more. We got some more really, really good guests coming up. And thanks for joining the Howard Eskin podcast.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norsides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or draft pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.